and welcome to episode 57 of the Card Hoarder Podcast, your weekly source for Magic Online news, community, and finance. You can find the show every week on iTunes, MTGCast, and of course, our home site, cardhoarder.com. You can check out other content like Magic Online guides and Team Card Hoarder articles. Be sure to check out cardhoarder.com for buying and selling Magic Online singles with round-the-clock customer service. My name is Connor. I am the host and editor for the podcast, joined as I am always by my two co-hosts. First up, Nathaniel. Hello.
Hey, Connor. How's it going?
Not too bad. Also joining me from Ireland, the degenerate co-host of the cast, Dave C. Dave, how's it going, man?
How you doing, Connor?
Quite well. So I have to ask, how quickly did you buy your ticket to Amsterdam? Like, did you even consider GB Vegas?
Unfortunately, that's still a little bit out of price range, even with the money won from Copenhagen. It was pretty fast. Like, it had to be the Monday because I was afraid plane tickets would go up. I literally had a hotel open in front of me and was trying to convince a friend to go, as like it was 140 each or something. And as I was maybe convincing someone, I went to try and book it and was gone. So things were leaving fast. I had to move fast and I had to make plans. I also need to give myself time to test. And since I don't own any magic cards, beg friends to let me borrow them. So a lot needs to be done in the next couple of days.
What format?
I'm very unfortunately standard. But I'm only 3 points off the captaincy. Also, as you introduced me, I'm a degenerate, and if I fall off the horse, I feel like I need to jump right back on straight away.
Of course. So step back a little bit. For those who don't know, Dave actually won. You tweeted updates this weekend. You know, you're chronicling your deep run at GB Copenhagen. Unfortunately, you fell just short of top 8, finishing 13th place.
Yeah, it's in a few weeks, I'll probably step back and look at it and think, you know, it's great. And I'm not really mad. I can't really complain, because any magic tournament where you double your money essentially from what's going on in is an absolute miracle. So few people do it in the actual tournament. So only 16 people are really going to double their money. Maybe a couple of the people that win 500 are going to double their money, but going to a GP is expensive. The entry to this GP was expensive to begin with.
It's why I don't play GPs, so I completely understand. Is this the best finish you've had at a Grand Prix before?
Yeah, so this was X3. I needed to go X3 to get 13th place, which is very lucky. The other GP going into Japan, I think X3 didn't make money. Some X2s didn't top 8. Like, a bunch of X2s didn't top 8. It was so big. So I can count myself lucky with an X3 getting me 13th place. My finish before this was X3 1, and that was, like, way further down. So this is, I'd say, by far my best finish, because the other finish, I also had picked up my third loss at halfway through day one. So I was never in contention. This was the second last round of the day. I was still playing for top 8.
All right, so first let's start with, what did you play and why did you choose to play it? Because I know you've been trying to figure out, like, what modern deck you want to play for a while.
So I've been testing for a pretty long time. On and off since the last modern GP, I take breaks for BTQs coming up and play a week of standard or a week of limited. I think you were on the stream when I first start testing Grixis Shadow, and I actually saw you put up a list that Michael Majors had been talking about and writing articles about. Yeah, that's when I started with this deck. This deck has not actually changed that much. Like, its main deck has not changed that much from Michael's first kind of muddlings with it, I guess.
Yeah, the only difference I can remember is, like, there was no lightning bolts in the main, or at least the list that Caleb Durward was playing that had no lightning bolts in the main. I've seen various lists, as we'll go into. There's been a lot of people playing this deck, obviously. I've seen lightning bolts in and out, but most of the numbers of the other ones, it's pretty much the same. Some have one terminate, some have two.
Yeah, it's stuff like that. Like, there's 6 removal spells, and you can go there's 5 removal spells, and you can go 3 push to terminate, or the other way, or you can go, like, any combination of that, or you want 3 pushes, the, like, smallest amount I've seen. But they're all metagame concessions. Some people run 1 Blood Crypt, some run 2. Besides that, all the numbers, 4 Serum Visions, 4 Tall Casts, stuff like this, they don't change. It's very solid. The numbers of Snappies have gone up and down. I was running the full 4, but other people have run 3, other people have run 2, other people have run 1 Baby Jace. There's very few actual changes, except in the board, where there can be pretty major changes depending on what you expect to play. So essentially, I went between a bunch of different decks. I tested them all on stream and tried to see what was best in the metagame. A lot of people told me, you know, why you're on Grixis, why not try Jund when I was testing it? That's getting the best results online or whatever. But anytime I tried Jund, everyone seemed like super ready for it. And while Jund Death Shadow is still a good mid-range deck, I think it's slightly easier to plan for it and to just try and neutralize its threats and do a certain game plan, because all that deck is essentially doing is making you discard cards, playing 1-mana 7-7s or 2-mana 6-7s. That's its nearly entire game plan in a nutshell. It has some good removal as well. Where the Grixis Shadow deck can come from a couple different angles, and it can fight hate a bit better, with generic cards like Stubborn Denial and Snapcaster are just really efficient cards in the deck and have a kind of wide range of how good they are in different matchups.
Yeah, dude, Studs is awesome. I love Stubborn Denial.
Yeah, Stubborn Denial was awesome all weekend. More people know about it now, so less people like fall face first into it.
Oh, but man, I got somebody so good with it the other day. It was great.
It's still flexible. It's still something they have to respect, and it helps you protect those threats that are being attacked. Also, this deck, I think, can just win more without one of the big threats. Like, I snapballed snapped a decent amount of people. I definitely won one of the mirrors by chump blocking with one of the big creatures, and then going Colligan's Command, you get a snap caster back, snapball, snap, you're dead. So that is a kind of flexibility you have with this deck. And the blue blings along a bunch of sideboard slots that I really like as well, including Ceremonious Rejection being a big one.
Yeah, that's like the new hot tech. How'd you like that? Obviously, that's kind of hedging towards Eldrazi, I assume. I assume it's like not great against Affinity.
You still bring it in against Affinity. It cannot be great because sometimes you have to interact with Affinity's board, but it's a nice clean answer to Etch Champion, and it lets you play more than one spell in a turn. A lot of your spells out of these Death Shadow decks, and why it's so good, start 1 and 2 mana, so you get to play 2 spells a turn in a lot of matchups. And Ceremonious lets you do that against Affinity. But if you ever have Ceremonious Snapcaster in play and you're playing against Tron Eldrazi, how are they ever going to win?
Yeah.
You're just sitting there and you're like, you're not going to resolve a meaningful spell for so long. It's crazy. And it's so good against them. It's also really good against Tron, which is the same thing. I've taught seized you once or twice. I know about your hand. You have 1 or 2 unknowns. But I have Snappy Rejection. You're just not going to resolve anything. It was also a nod a bit towards Tron playing stuff like Wyrmcoil. A lot of them were starting to run 3 or 4 Wyrmcoils in the main deck to counteract these mid-range decks. Because you would bring in Stubborn, you'd bring in the full 4 Stubborn and Oz to try and fight what they're doing. But now Rejection punishes them no matter what one of those threats they choose to play. So that helped in that matchup a little bit. That was actually a change down to the last minute. I was still on Fulminator, not convinced by Ceremonious Rejection. Twitch chat helped me maybe put 1 or 2 on the board and I was impressed. And then a friend of mine had the full tree in his and was just telling me how fantastic it was.
Nice. Well, at least it must feel nice that your deck selection was on point. I mean, I can't pronounce his name. Matea Rizzi won that GP with Grixis Shadow, and also Brad won STG Baltimore with the same deck. Also, there was a player that made the top 8 of the Japanese GP. That was like the only normal deck in that top 8. There were some strange decks in that top 8.
Yeah. I feel a little bit vindicated. I also, when you sit down and you have matchups, and if you had played a different deck, stuff goes differently in many different ways on the day, but yeah. I sit down, they play their cards, and you're like, I'm very happy none of the other 3 decks in contention, that I went with any of the 3 decks in contention. For those of you that were interested, some of the decks that I tested were Jund Death Shadow, which I had Boggles for a long time, because it's really good against, there's not that many Lilianas in the format, I think, at the moment, and it's really good against some of the Death Shadow and more grindy matchups. Was losing too much to combo for my liking. To be honest, I got comboed out a lot when I was playing it, and I wasn't happy with that. It also lost to itself. I guess those were like the final 3. Jund Death Shadow was me just admitting that I didn't know what was happening in the format, and I'm just going to pick the default best deck. But that's very dangerous to do in Modern, since there's so many moving targets, people tend to just lock on to the biggest one.
Right, and Dredge was not on your map, I assume, right? Because it seemed like you didn't like it when I talked to you about it.
No, but Living End was for a little while, because it's got so many...
Yeah, that's seen a resurgence, too.
Yeah, it's so many better cyclers. So I thought it would see a resurgence initially in my testing, because Wear Tear is now playable on the board. Though I don't think that showed up that much in builds. They didn't want to stretch their mana for it. And Archfiend shores up the Dredge matchup and the Affinity matchup. There were some Archfiends. Desert Ceridon and the Demon from the new set. I can't remember its name. But the demon from the new set have both seen the not the Archfiend, but the ground guy that just gets bigger when you cycle.
Yeah, the common. I can't remember the name of it, but yep.
Yeah. They have changed the deck, and they've changed the deck now because when it does face hate, when you do play the Rest in Peace, when a spell bomb comes down and you have to just force Living End early, you now have 10 power in play and a guy that probably can't get killed because you're going to cycle 3 more times. And Archfiend has given them game against Affinity and Dredge, which were terrible matchups before for Living End. So that deck has certainly improved. I didn't like Dredge, even though I played it a bit, and it did do well in a couple of tournaments. But I think it's just a turn too slow at the moment against other combo decks, and then against grindy decks. because you're turned to slow, it means you recover from hate a lot slower, I think. No longer, like, after one hate card, you just dredge six twice and your entire graveyard's full again. I felt very vindicated for my choice, and that's not only because a lot of, you know, Brad Nelson, huge pro, big metagamer in general, always likes playing the best deck for the day, played it. But every time I sat down against a deck that I thought John Death Shadow would lose to straight away, I'm like, I'm very happy with my choice.
Every time I play Storm, I just smash that deck.
Exactly. It's stuff where you just have that 5% extra on John Death Shadow. Round 4, I played against Blue-White. No way I was ever beating it in a million years with John Death Shadow. Beat it with Grixis Death Shadow. I played Eldrazi Tron twice, and while that's not a bad matchup for Death Shadow, it's a really good one, I think, for Grixis Death Shadow, especially with Ceremonious Rejection in the board. And so on and so forth throughout the whole day. I played Abzan twice, and I'm pretty sure I would have got crushed if I was John Death Shadow. And the games were close, and my opponents got a bit unlucky with certain keeps, but certainly my blue cards were what kept me in those games.
So a deck I wanted to ask you about, if you saw it all during the tournament or if you tested against it in particular, this new, I don't want to call it Counters Company. It's a really bad name, but...
It confused me. That name confused me. People were talking about it at the GP. Like, what's a Counters Company? Is someone playing like a Collected Company deck with Spell Queller in it? Do I have to watch out for this?
So it's the new hotness. It has the new combo with... what's the creature from Amonkhet that...
Vizier of Remedies.
Yeah, whatever. So it combos now with the O2 like mana dork that
Devoted Druid,
right? So I lost to this deck twice because mainly just I was unfamiliar with it and I'm just a dumb.
Yeah, it's a good deck. I tested it for a little bit in my process. So before this combo came in, the Abzan Company decks weren't playable, and one of the prime reasons is Graveyard Hate is just generically good at the moment. You have Living End, you have Dredge, and also Graveyard Hate is just good against Death Shadow variants. It's very good against Grixis. Lots of random Nile spell bombs and black decks, lots of 2-of Rest in Peace and white decks that don't use their graveyard, you know? And that was troublesome. That was annoying that these... You can still randomly Gavinny Township people, but that, you know, decks that weren't aiming to beat you were beating you anyway out of the board. So now you have a combo that doesn't require the graveyard, so you can be a strict combo deck against board cards, and neither of the combo pieces are that embarrassing by themselves. Like, Devoted Druid lets you get out a company a turn earlier. Vizier of Remedies is just good if there's a Kitchen Finks on the board. It's not too bad to draw them separately, but I found that none of its matchups got that much better. So the deck overall got better and better against random hate by a couple of percentages, but it wasn't beating decks that I wanted to beat anyway. So I still think its Death Shadow matchup is bad. And this is still a point of contention. Some people think Abzan Company... I still call it Abzan Company. Some people think Abzan Company, Counters Company, whatever you want to call it, is the favorite. But I think Grixis Shadow is the favorite. I played it twice. I beat it twice.
Okay. Well, I just played poorly against it. That was why I lost.
Well, you definitely need to know what's happening. And I think game one, you can certainly just lose to Gavinny Township. It's not too hard to break up their combo. Like, if you have the right cards, you have a couple Fatal Pushes, they're probably not going to combo you, especially with Snapcaster.
That's the key. I would eventually lose the Gavinny Township, usually.
Yeah, and that's what happened to me in the tournament a lot. I lost to Gavinny Township in a game one against one guy, and then Anger just helped twice. One game, I went turn one, Thoughtseize you. Turn two, play two Death Shadows off a combination of Fetches, Straight Race, and Thoughtseize. Turn three, Anger away your four creatures. You lose. I think cards like Anger are so potent against them out of the sideboard of these decks, because they can't really play Coy. They can't really wait turns, because then you're playing 8/8s for one.
Yep.
They need to play blockers, and along with their blockers, they need to be either comboing or they need to be attacking your life total. When I say ahead, I don't mean don't play Abzan counters. It's not a good deck. You're just going to get destroyed by Death Shadow. It's still close. I just don't think it's gained anything in matchups. I don't know. People were complaining about how fast the combo was. That's how fast the deck could combo before. It's a little bit more consistent. Is all, but that's exactly how fast. And people are like, oh, did Wizards even know about this combo? Does it matter? It's not winning the game on turn two.
Right, I'm totally fine with it.
Yeah, it's not changing the fundamental turn that the deck went off undisrupted. We have one mana at 12/12, so I don't think I'm too worried about possible infinite mana if your opponent had no way to interact with your board by turn three.
Yeah, I love how Cedric was just goading Brad. Like, you should be playing Death Shadow before this card gets banned. Like, you should be happy about it. I don't know if that convinced him to play in Baltimore, because I think he was going to play in a different tournament instead of Baltimore. Then, like, I think last minute he played in Baltimore, of course. Then he won. So what's next for you on the search for that PT invite? I know you have, you said Amsterdam, and there's a RPT you said. Is that the online one, or are you doing a paper one?
I'm doing a paper one, but I'm now regretting it. One, because I've randomly been a psychopath and jumped onto the Amsterdam train. But... Two, I talked to the TO, was actually there selling as like a stand at the GP. I think they're called Fnatic. They're a shop out of Copenhagen. And I said, how many do you expect? Expecting them to say 30 or something or 40. And he's like, well, definitely more than 40 was his first sentence. I just asked him, how many do you expect? He's like, definitely more than 40. We've made room for like 80 plus. I'm like, mother fudge balls. The only reason I didn't go to the English one is because they usually get 80 plus people. I wanted to go to a nice small one. Well, the small one still got the same invites as the big one, so I don't get to game the system. But essentially, the next 2 weeks for me is about, I'm now 3 points short of the captaincy. So we have three people in contention for the captaincy. Well, technically more, because someone could go to the PT, and we have so little points that anyone could go to one PT top 16 and take the captaincy. But three of us are in a serious contention for the captaincy. Two of us on 5 points, because we were at the World Magic Cup, and we both got a couple points from GPs. I think he got them over two, I got them over one. And a guy called Craig Chapman, I talked about him before on the show, Magic Online Fnatic, and he got 7 points at the Pro Tour. McKaylee is the other guy searching for the captaincy. He's going to Amsterdam with me. Craig doesn't seem to be able to go to any events in the meantime. And if I qualify for the Pro Tour, either through Copenhagen RPTQ or the PTQ on day two of the GP, I will also automatically get the captaincy, because I get 3 points for being, I think Kyoto's the Pro Tour.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah, I would get 3 points for just attending Kyoto, so I would take the captaincy if no one else gets any. So I have to get 8 points.
Exciting times. So Dave, while you've been, you know, clawing to get your first Pro Tour invite and the captain's seat, you know, there was a player that was awarded a special invite to the Pro Tour last week. So this topic, we've got a lot to discuss on this podcast. So Wizards started handing out special invites back in 2013, I believe. That's when it was kind of introduced. And actually gave out invites to players that, like, missed the Pro Tour a bunch because of, like, the old PTQ system. Like, I know Max Brown was given one for that reason. Same for Eric Frolig, but that was before he was, like, a Hall of Famer. But as far as, like, inviting gaming celebrities, personalities, however you want to label it, Day 9 was the first I can think of, or maybe the only one I can think of, too. Somehow you don't know who Day 9 is. He's Sean Plott, one of the most well-known streamers, casters, known for playing StarCraft, and his brother's, his name is Tasteless. He's one of the top commentators for StarCraft. So, very big name. He played Magic, like, on and off, and obviously he doesn't play Magic anymore. After that special invite, doesn't play Magic anymore. I know he had that TV show. What was that called? Not TV show, the YouTube show.
Yeah, he played Magic with other celebrities. I can't remember the name of it.
Yeah, it was a good show. It was really great to, like, expose people to Magic. Got a lot of views, so I think that was a really well done by Wizards to give him that. But last week, Wizards announced they gave a special invite to Amaz HS. So that that's a popular Hearthstone streamer, and he got a special invite to the Pro Tour. And we've mentioned this streamer on the show before, most notably when Amaket was released. He was streaming day one of the release, and he brought in huge numbers to the game. So I'm wondering if those numbers in particular prompted this invite, or if, like, Wizards somehow had been planning to invite him. I'm guessing not. I'm guessing they saw those big numbers. Hey, we should take notice to this. So I believe Dave and I are in the same position here. Mostly positive, but disappointed in Wizards' execution with this decision. Nathaniel, I haven't heard anything from you. I don't know what your stance is on special invites. You know, we haven't gotten to talk about this topic on the cast since this happened in 2013. So, what are your thoughts on special invites?
I don't even know still, I think. I like the idea. Just like I like the idea of the streamer showdowns, I think the selection, I think, leaves a little bit to be desired, perhaps, in some cases. And perhaps what I complain about most about that, which is kind of the illusion of the old boys club, depending on your perspective, I think is a concern if they were to open it up. But my immediate concern was, like, I have no idea who this person is. Granted, like, I don't watch Hearthstone streaming. I don't even really watch that much streaming generally. Sounds like he's a very large streamer, this person. Is it Amaz? Amaze?
Amaz. I think it's pronounced Amaz, yep.
I mean, just based on the number of Twitter followers, I assumed his Twitch channel is massive. So, but the fact that I didn't know who it was initially was a little surprising to me when they're going to, you know, give out a special invite. But, I mean, I think inherently they are a good thing, especially because the process for qualifying for the Pro Tour, as Dave may attest to, is a bit cumbersome and a bit strange and sort of support. Once you get there, it's easier to stay than it is to get there in the first place, which is a bit weird. So I like the idea of that. And I saw people kind of poking fun or complaining, I guess, depending on your perspective, saying the promotional tour. And then Mark Rosewater, like, clearly took offense to that. You know, and I understand why he took exception to it, but WotC doesn't treat it like a professional tour. They treat it like a promotional tour.
Yes. So that's my huge deal with it. Yep.
Which, you know, I think either perspective is fine. I think clearly the way esports have gone is to have it be, yes, of course, a little bit of both, and the bigger it is, the more promotional it is, but you want to have your players have it be their profession. And I think that we've seen for many, many years, I think we've seen from the prize support that WotC puts into it, you cannot really very easily make it your profession. Some people do, and they kind of, you know, they don't live like in the lap of luxury, and they can get by, but it's, you do bad at four events this year, and they are, you know, then that's very bad for your well-being. So, you know, not a lot of people want to do that for a very long period of time. You don't want to travel maybe to the same extent that you have to, you know, play the Grand Prix circuit and all that. So, you know, you can't take exception when people take those types of digs when you don't treat it like a professional tour and pay the players, or at least create the environment where the players can be paid, either via advertising or whatever. If you are creating that environment, you cannot take exception to, you know, people taking digs at it. You know, in conclusion, I guess, you know, I like the idea. I didn't know the player. That isn't necessarily bad. It just surprised me. It sounds like, having learned more about him, that he's a perfectly good choice. It makes plenty of sense from a business point of view. You know, I am fine with them giving out special invites to some extent. I think the suggestion I liked the most was that there's X number per Pro Tour that they give out. And maybe some of those are for, like, you know, Numot strikes me as a person that should get one.
That, I was going to bring that up, and I'm wondering if Numot just, like, I'm sure they offered him one, and I'm guessing he turned it down.
Really?
I don't know. He just seems like that kind of guy. Like, nope, I want to earn it, I would think.
He said before he would. I made this point to Archie on my stream.
He said he would turn it down, or he said...
He said on stream before that he probably would turn it down if he was offered. I said this on stream. It's easy for him to say because... it's harder for him to say because he might be offered one day. But I said the same thing on my stream. I'm like, you know what? It's weird. It is a career choice because you got to imagine the EV to a Pro Tour, especially through a special invite, is pretty high. Like, I think Melissa Del Toro, she top aided when she was special invited, I think. Was Gate Crash, she top aided, right?
Yep.
Yeah, she was special invited to that. She top aided. So the EV to it is enormous.
I think that just underscores why I think you should have no problem whatsoever accepting it. Even you, Dave, because... Getting there is just kind of BS. You know, not to sound like crude about it, but it doesn't reflect the best player. Like, the Pro Tour, because of the way you get on the Pro Tour, does not reflect the best players that play our game. Because it's a weird, you have to grind. You've got to really put in effort to get onto the Pro Tour, and you got to combine that with a little bit of luck. Being just good at the game is not enough.
I don't think anybody can argue that it's, no fault in people accepting these.
I was going to say, it's very easy for me to say that I wouldn't take it because I'm never going to get it. So it's very easy for me to get up on my high horse and say I wouldn't take a special invite if it was, you know, handed to me on a silver platter. I can say that with 100% certainty that I will never be in that situation. It's very easy to look back from behind your computer and look at this situation and say, you know, you shouldn't give that guy it. He didn't earn it. You know, if I was in that situation, I'd want to earn it clean and sparkling and make my own way. But you're never going to be offered that. You're never going to be offered the equivalent of a lot of money in a career-changing move on a platter. So it's very easy for people to get on their high horses about it.
Yeah, but I'm just... I understand what you're saying, but I was more just saying that you shouldn't put stock in whether or not people qualify this way or this way. You know, because there's... Yeah. I've talked about how hard it is as an American, say, to qualify versus... if I moved to some other smaller country, I think I would have a significantly higher chance of getting on the Pro Tour just because it's easier to qualify in that country. What? And I'm not trying to dig at that country. Just saying that, like, the road to the Pro Tour is not the same in all ways. Yeah. And so I don't think we need to put much stock in how someone got there. But how they then perform, I think, like, you gave a great example of Melissa Del Toro. Is it Del Toro or Del Toro?
Del Toro.
You know, getting a special invite that she quote-unquote didn't earn, you know, if that's your perspective. And then she top-aided. So clearly she deserved to be there. Clearly she's of a caliber to be there. If you get a special invite or Newmont gets one, there is zero shame whatsoever in taking it. Take that invite and then show us that you deserve to be there, is what I think. I mean, the only reason not to take is if you truly think you aren't good enough to be there. I don't think you think that. I think you're good enough to be there. And same for Newmont. I think Newmont performs well enough that he should. He's absolutely in that tier, in the top, whatever, was it 400 or 500 people at a Pro Tour that should be playing for the Pro Tour glory.
Yeah, so here's something to put it into a bit of perspective. We're talking about look and how lucky you got to be. I went X3 at this GP. That got me 3 pro points. X3 always gets you 3 pro points. If I won one more game, if I had made one more slight correct play, if I got a bit luckier with one or two of my draws, I X2 and I qualify for next Pro Tour. I would have to go X3. I think silver is 20 points at the moment. Maybe it's 18. So what's that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5... I'd have to go to 7 GPs and go X3 to get the equivalent of what someone got for just getting one more match luckier, playing one more match a bit tighter than I did at any individual one of those GPs. And if you look at it as a metric like that, that's ridiculous. That is absolutely absurd when you break it down like that. That one game, that one slight misplay, that one, you get unlucky. You know, it's really hard.
And I think that's why they took special invites away. It's just people just put so much work into it, and then they saw the backlash from this in 2013, so that's why they took it away. At least they're not giving it back to players now. Obviously, the old PTQ system it's not around anymore, so there's less of those super feel bads of getting second place at the PTQ, at least.
I think it is still fair to, as much as I don't mind, I'm a bit like Nathaniel, I don't mind that people get special invited, mostly because I'm just very concerned with how I'm doing. And I don't really care how other people get to the Pro Tour as long as I also have an avenue to get there. But I can understand people like me in the same situation. I was jokingly giving out because I've nearly missed the Pro Tour by every single way possible. I'm one win short of in a GP. I'm one win short in the Nationals. I'm one win short in a PTQ to qualify. And I could imagine someone else in my situation just being mad. Like, how dare they? Do they not know how hard I work? Do they not know how many hours I do this? Do they not know how much money I spent? Just because I'm not famous, that doesn't mean anything. I'm still a competitor. So I can definitely see why someone gets mad at this and why people are taking to Twitter and they're giving out. I think those people probably need to fix their mentality a bit. It is an individual sport and it doesn't matter as long as they're not taking a space off the overall Pro Tour. As long as they're not saying, you know, one less person qualifies from GPs this year because AMAZ gets in.
So I want to bring this a different way because you brought up that how Magic is a very singular kind of sport or whatever game, whatever you want to call it. So there's very awkward kind of variables here for this particular instance. So you mentioned that, yeah, it's him getting the invite. It's super awkward that the Pro Tour is now all about teams. So how are they going to market the Pro Tour now? How are they going to like focus on their coverage? Like, that's kind of weird. And I also think their execution is just really poor here because, like, I think their big plan is that they're inviting this Hearthstone player. And I would think that their Hail Mary is hoping that, like, they can snatch some Hearthstone players since AMAZ will, in theory, stream more Magic Online in preparation for the Pro Tour, right? I think that was their hope.
Yeah, I guess so.
I mean, the cost to them doing it is negligible. I don't think they're paying him.
Sure, I don't like that argument, too, because it doesn't... I mean, yes, I think it's... very low cost. I just don't like the argument of, you didn't say zero, but a lot of people have said it literally costs them zero. Well, no, it doesn't, because I assume they're paying for his flight, his hotel.
I'm sure he got whatever, like $2,000.
Yeah.
You know, worth of stuff. It's possible they paid him. It's not impossible.
Right.
It's going to be very hard to know for sure if that kind of stuff happened. The big thing about AMAZ is, and I think why they're you know, signaling him out in this, one, when he randomly streams Magic, he brings around like 3,000 viewers plus. When he's just like, I'm sick of Hearthstone, let's do some Magic. Because he likes Magic, it's what he played, as far as I know, before Hearthstone a bit. But he's also, as far as I know, been on record of, he considered streaming Magic, but its interface isn't good enough. He didn't think it would get enough attention, and Hearthstone got so much attention, he got on the ground floor of it. So I think that's why they're kind of... doing this. I also, the perspective of they're trying to get the Hearthstone audience, and this is another reason I'm against, as in, I don't care that he's there. I don't think it's bad. They lose very little by doing it. I think you're right, Nathaniel, but I don't think inviting him to the Pro Tour, where there's a good chance, even if he is a very good player, he seems decent, he has a good limited modal rating as far as I know.
Yeah, 1750 or excuse me 1950 is difficult to get on Magic Online. You have to be very good.
He is certainly no slouch, and people who are good at games tend to be good at all games. People who are at the very highest level of games tend to be able to switch over to other games and do well. They just have a brain for it. Is the Pro Tour a best place to get him exposure to Magic? Is some people's
no, I don't think so. And here's my other big problem with this. It's like it's their strategy and timing of marketing that's just always it's terrible. So we're inviting Amos to the Pro Tour. Most of his audience, I assume, is from the U.S. So can you answer me where this next Pro Tour is that you got this invite for?
It's Kyoto.
Yeah, Japan. What? This doesn't make sense. Why would you do this? So, like, when are we going to see this player? Probably early on, particularly draft. So nobody will see it. This is a Hail Mary. We're hoping that he top 8s the Pro Tour. And there's actually an old Reddit thread recently. Somebody asked how many players actually make it to top 8 of the Pro Tour of their first Pro Tour. And it's usually around one a year. Which is actually more than I thought it would be. I thought it would be a lot less than that. But going back like about 10 years, it's usually 1 to 2 players that make it. But they're usually established players in the Magic community that play like either like a lot of SCG tournaments, a lot of GPs as well. Very few players like AMAZ that just plays Magic Online. But you see my point though. Like this thing doesn't make sense to me of why this is such a great idea. Obviously, it just costs so little to Wizards, so who cares? But like, why time this now? Like, it doesn't make sense.
Well, you bring up an interesting point. I don't think that it was supposed to be this big thing. Is your impression that they're like, because you keep using words like Hail Mary and like they're really going out on a limb to like make this work? Whereas I just kind of took it like, yeah, we invited a big Hearthstone streamer. Like maybe it'll pay a little bit, but I mean, $2,000 as the net cost to them is like nothing. It's not any amount of money. Of course, community backlash is expensive. So the extent that I guess people are upset and change their spending behavior or their grinding behavior because of this, you know, that could affect it and that could be a cost. But I didn't get the impression that they were, you know, kind of going all in here and making a big deal out of it. I thought it was
I'll try to rephrase. I don't think they were trying to go all in. I'm just saying they're hoping to spike is kind of what I'm saying. It's like they're hoping that he spikes so they can spike off of his notoriety, I should say.
Okay, so you think they want him in the top 8?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I want him in the top 8. That'd be an awesome story. But, I mean, we've seen where Wizards can go with building stories, building stars, and it's just they keep dropping the ball constantly.
See, I think there's a bit of a bad philosophy behind all this, right? Because you want his fans to come over to Magic. There's a reason his fans don't watch Magic, and it's not because they don't know Magic doesn't exist. Like, maybe there's going to be a cross-section of them that don't know Magic exists and only know Hearthstone exists, and they're going to go, hey, Magic is a thing. Let's go watch Magic streamers. No, they're Twitch people, and they've come to watch a game that looks appealing and lots of content makers that, because their game looks appealing and can get super large numbers, put in a lot of effort to make this their life's work. And to fix that in Magic, you don't try and poach them off of an existing streamer. You fix how your game looks. You fix how your game is streamed. You support streamers. And I'm not saying that they don't try and, you know, help streamers. For example, someone pointed out to Rich Hagen that I was a streamer and I got on camera. You know, I was undefeated. I was a streamer. They went out of their way to try and get me a feature match, and I got to commentate on a Time Walk match for a little bit. And that's fantastic. And in general, if you point stuff like that out to them, they go for it. But it's back to, we're an MTGO podcast. It's back to MTGO. You're not going to get AMAZ numbers. Like, if AMAZ decides to all of a sudden stream Magic full time, he's not going to get as much numbers as he does now. It's not his personality. It's not the different videos he does, even though he does a very good job on both those aspects. It's the game he plays while doing those things. I don't know if they're just trying to get another personality in the game. I don't know if they think it's going to be a major kind of like find. I don't know if they think that this is going to convert Hearthstone players. It feels like a lot of Magic policy when it's come to Hearthstone has been like Magic's policies to Yu-Gi-Oh! Or Versus or Pokemon. People will develop to Magic because Magic is the better game. I don't think that's going to happen with Hearthstone. So I don't know what their goal with AMAZ is.
It feels like it just kind of reading a little too much into it. This guy's a famous guy. He clearly likes Magic, which it's not like some random who's never played and they're inviting him to. That would be strange. But, you know, clearly he can play. You know, whether or not he's going to top, I don't think it needs to do well for even for it to be successful in some way. Like, hey, like, this guy's famous and he's in this, you know, similar target demographic or even not. And let's just, you know, let's have him come to the Pro Tour. I'm sure they have some things in mind as far as coverage. Maybe they'll do an interview with him. You know, I don't think it has to be much more than that. It doesn't have to be like some grand scheme to bring Hearthstone type numbers to streaming. It can just be, I just think it's overblown. As much as I mean, obviously I'm happy to discuss it, but it's you know, I don't think there needs to be some grand plan here. It's just like a...
I don't think there needs to be a grand plan either, Nathaniel. It just can easily be implemented a little bit better. I mean, inviting him to a US Pro Tour just sounds like an easy thing to do. It's probably easier for him as well. Although, I mean, who knows? He might really want to go to Japan. Hell, I would love to go to Japan. So
I actually don't know his background. I know that he did voices in different languages for Hearthstone for a set. I don't know, but I do agree with you in general, Connor, that it seems weird not to just get him on American Times. I thought of some ideas, like maybe you could have run a little mini tournament on Twitch. What if you got like 4 people from outside Direct Magic or 5 people or whatever, 6... and you had them compete for a Pro Tour slot in some kind of competitive tournament. And then you have people watching the Magic Channel watch people from outside Magic play. Then you will get his followers watching him for a day play a mini PTQ, right?
Yeah, or one of the pre-releases, somebody else brought that up. I thought that'd be a perfect opportunity to get somebody like that. And
there's so many more things than you could have done than just, yeah, he's in the Pro Tour now. I know it kind of seems lazy, and I don't know. Maybe I'm overblowing it. Maybe I'm overthinking it. Maybe these things don't have to be done, and maybe they're better at marketing than I think, and this is actually just going to spike the views of the Pro Tour. But at the moment, what I could see happening easily, and this is not talking about how good or bad he is, because it doesn't matter, this happens to the best of people, he could draft. They could watch him draft, or they could watch him play in the draft. He could lose. He could go on to lose again. He could go on to lose again. LSV is 0-4'd, PT, you know, or 1-4'd or 1-5'd, and has never been on camera for the whole weekend. It can happen to anyone. And then it feels like a waste, like you haven't got the coverage you want out of him for a celebrity being there.
Right.
Pro tours are hard, man. I mean, that's why we have a podcast, right? Where we go into things in depth. So, yeah I'm totally fine with this. Like, I'm just picking this apart. Yeah, I'm totally fine with this. It's just, I'm just concerned with how we've done this in the past, and that's what kind of gets me, because I see Day 9 and he was a little bit a part of the Magic community just for a little bit, and then no more at all. You don't see him, you would never see him play Magic at all. So I'm just worried that this kind of become a similar situation. Obviously this is a completely different person that we're dealing with here, so it could be completely different, and I'm all for that. So
yeah, but just to point out, like, those types of, you know, internet celebrities or streaming celebrities or video celebrities, whatever you want to call them, they make a bunch of money, and they can't make that bunch of money from Magic in the same way. So yeah. You can't really blame them, since it's their job. It's not like, you know, he might not play it for fun. You know, if it needs to be your job, and you can make $1 million playing Hearthstone or $40,000 playing Magic, and you're sort of, you know, relatively indifferent between the two, I think we all know which one most people would choose.
Right, and that's the negative why I don't like this. Again, it gets that risk in there of just getting bad feedback from these big stars of what the state of Magic is in right now. Because you always hear, like, the outside articles, like, oh, there's a broken combo in Standard. Is Magic fall apart here? Obviously, the people in the inner community is like, no. Just like, it's fine, whatever. But the outside people, they have a lot of more press to the outside, you know, people looking into Magic. And that's, how do we get more new players into Magic? And that's kind of been what the struggling thing of Magic. And Magic Online obviously has some hurdles with that as well. Saffron talked about that in his article. The whole thing, it just kind of surprised me. I didn't think we were ever going to go back to special invites just the way it was handled last time. And I never like saying, oh, we shouldn't do this thing because the community might react in this way. I think Wizard just, it comes down to utilizing its talent as always. I don't think they do it to their fullest. And I wish that Magic as a game would just improve in that way, general, whether it comes to commentators, streamers. I think there's better ways to utilize it. There's a lot of talented people out there. And I think we can improve in that realm.
So I guess my final word on it is, for those of you that feel hard done by, by this. I think you need to take a step back. And I there's some sage advice I listen to when I get down, and we'll play it for you now.
Do you need the movie star speech?
Yeah.
Okay. Carolyn, you are the star of a movie. And this is the part of the movie where you get your heart broken.
Where the world tests you and people treat you like...
Dragon's Maze!
But it has to happen this way. Otherwise, the end of the movie, when you get everything you want, won't feel as rewarding. There are...
Dragon's Maze!
...out there, but in the end...
They don't matter. Because this movie's not about them. It's never been about them. All this time, the movie's been about you.
Thanks.
All right, well, good stuff, Dave. Thanks for sending that clip for me. Time to move on from special invites. So next up, we'll discuss Magic Online news and our thoughts on the Throwback Standard Gauntlet. Here in Magic Online News, one broken Throwback Standard Gauntlet leaves, and a one less broken Gauntlet will be taking its place this week. Before we gush over the new deck lists of the new Gauntlet, let's share our thoughts on the Combo Winter Gauntlet. We'll do this briefly. I personally didn't play any of it. I watched several streamers combo off. Besides the emergency downtime, the Gauntlet seemed to run smoother, I would say. Didn't hear of any bugs this time around. Although, funny note that since the Throwback Standard Gauntlet is in the limited queues, I don't know if you guys heard about this or tried this, that I heard you could sideboard in several thousand lands against Academy.
Yeah, that's exactly what you can do. Apparently, someone did that against, I think it was a Japanese player, and the guy timed out because he just had seven lands in hand the entire time. He's like, okay, we'll play draw go really slowly over 50 minutes and you'll just lose.
Okay. That's what we've come to on Magic Online, really.
The guy that sided in the lands timed out?
Yeah.
Doesn't know about F6 and click, huh? Man.
But he was behind on time already by a little bit, so when he saw that he brought in 7,000 lands, he just went F6, 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 and he just ran out of time.
Really? I mean, man, we gotta get him a tutorial on how to play quickly, because I've gotten in those situations with like 2 minutes less, 2 minutes or less, and when you just literally hold down F6 and you click your hand to discard, and one of you is gonna get decked before the time runs out, even with 2 minutes left.
So, even with 7,000 cards in your deck.
Well, both of them didn't have 7,000, did
that's,
they?
That's true. That's true. Maybe.
I mean, the other guy's got 60.
Yeah. I'm not sure about this story, Dave. I might have to call
you. Yeah, Dave.
That's just what I heard.
Oh, you heard that, did you?
Don't shoot the messenger. Don't shoot the messenger.
Sure, sure. So, Dave, I know you like torturing yourself here. So, how did you like this gauntlet, this go around in? Do you think this was well balanced?
I don't know if it was well balanced, but it was absolute nonsense. So, I loved it. And that, I guess that's exactly what it needs to be. Sometimes I'm going to enjoy seeing past standards sometimes. But this was just a nonsense part of Magic's history, and it was absolutely nonsense Magic decks. They all comboed off if they got the perfect hands on like turn three. I got killed turn one by the Jar deck.
Nice.
Awesome. Turn one me. So, you know, I wasn't even mad. Lee was actually in my chat when that happened. He turned one me, and I'm like, that's good old-fashioned Magic. He's like, yeah, they're good decks.
you got WotC lurkers in your channel now? You've reached a new status, Dave.
Apparently, they just do that to scare you straight, right? They just make one comment and leave so that you know you're getting watched at all times.
Yeah, that always happens when, like, Twitch staff is in the chat. It's like, oh, God, don't say anything weird. Twitch staff is here.
So it was a lot of fun. Definitely one or two of the combo decks were way better than the others, because this was kind of an era where cards were banned, like, one or two at a time. I can't remember the exact ban list and what order stuff went in. But stuff just stayed degenerate, because it's a bit like we've talked about when they ban cards, they shouldn't just ban the problem cards, but the cards that are supporting them. It's because there's stupid cards in the format that make a million mana each. So you ban one of the cards that make a million mana, guess what? The other card still makes a million mana, whether that card's in the format or not. But it was a lot of fun. I guess it's the most positive review I can give it, right? It worked correctly, and I had a lot of fun playing it and played it three or four times.
Yeah, sounds like a thumbs up to me. I think it did what exactly it needed to do. So great stuff. So the next gauntlet, though, will be starting this week already. And I think it's going to be a little less broken, I would think. As, you know, we're getting these flashback formats. They're coming in rapid fire now. We had triple mirrored in last week. So the next format will be early 2000s, including Nathaniel's favorite of Blue-Green Madness and Astral Slide, right? But even Battle of Wits, though, I wasn't expecting to see that, because I don't really know anything about the standard format. You also have Psychotog Rebels, Mono Black Control, Squirrel Opposition, so a lot more...
Goblin Biddings in there?
Yes.
I love that.
Yeah. All my favorite decks of all time are in there. Like, this is the period of Magic I did not get to play, and I want to play all these decks. Squirrel Opposition looks like the least fun for anyone to play against of all time.
Same. The decks seem a little bit more, how to describe this, like easily digestible, like easy to understand, or...
That's just Magic's history, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this is just about when we're talking about them actually putting, like, real teams in their sets and pushing kind of individual mechanics and supporting mechanics with non-mechanic cards.
For you Americans out there, he means themes.
what did I say?
You said teams. I was like, teams? What does he mean? And then I got it with the context, but I just had to take a dig.
So I promise I'll actually give this gauntlet a try. I know I keep saying that. Or I didn't play the combo winter one at all. I'm sorry, but I will definitely play this one. Nathaniel, will you actually play this gauntlet? That's the big question.
I mean, no.
At least you're honest, I guess.
Don't get me wrong, but... if I could play it, I would probably be able to play it once or twice. But I would be a sad, sad panda if I'm playing with, like, Rebels,
sure.
Fire. I mean, there's a few decks that I'd be like, ugh, I'll just concede and then play it again, maybe.
Yeah, somebody was saying that. They're like, if I don't get Battle of Wits, I'm just going to keep dropping until I get it.
Well, I mean, I'd love the Goblin deck, obviously. Like, UG Madness. And I will say that the Squirrel Opposition deck looks very similar, and like a lot of the cards are similar. I know it's trying to do something else, but that was intriguing to me. And then I know, like, when Shane listens to this cast, like, his favorite deck of all time, Astral Slide, is here, and I used to hate playing Slide against him, as you know, that was his deck of choice. So there's so many memories here, but I don't know that I can't easily enough recreate the memories. So I don't think I'm quite the target audience for, you know, if I could get in there and just jam Madness, yeah, I would probably play one. But I you know, what are the chances of me getting Madness are, what, 1 in 8 or 1 in 10? The odds aren't good enough for me to do it.
You get to psychotog people, though. You haven't lived until you've Dr. T'd someone out of the game. They think they're safe, discard Wander, bam, you're dead.
Dave, I've actually never psychotogged anybody. I mean, I've played like cubes a bunch with this card, and I'm just like, nah, I don't like blue-black, so I always passed it.
Wander's not even in the deck list.
Oh, it's not the Wander build? Aw.
Yeah, but, I mean, Fact or Fiction was...
that card's good, yeah.
It's a good... I mean, it's a ridiculous card in its day. The skill of knowing what to give your opponent was highly valued, which is... I mean, that's fun. Right, it's. I mean, it sucks having it get played against you, but the fact that you can kind of choose your own destiny a little bit is cool.
Yeah, I do love the mind games of the card, so I definitely appreciate that aspect of the card. I, obviously, when you have to, when you're like, well, I'm dead, whichever pile I choose here, so I separate it.
I always saw the Japanese way of playing it. You always take the bigger pile because it's more cards. You have a lethal shock in one pile, 4 cards in the other, at all lands. You're always taking the 4 lands. Don't be ridiculous. That's more cards than the shock.
Yeah, I'm definitely really excited for this gauntlet. Can't wait to try it. So moving on, we have the challenge decklist from Magic Online. We received some feedback. Really appreciate it. Sounded like listeners did enjoy this, but they wanted to kind of shorten it a little bit. Maybe only mention only interesting decklists. So the list that caught my eye most this week was the first place list from the Pauper Challenge from Methanical. I'm not sure how to pronounce your name. But I guess I would call this green-white tokens, but it has a combo win. And I've tried different builds of this combo. I'm just terrible at deck building, of course. But the combo, of course, is with Midnight Guard. It's a decent limited card, originally from Dark Ascension. Also reprinted to M15 if you ever play with it. So it's 2 and a white, 2/3. Whenever another creature enters the battlefield, you can untap it. And this has an infinite combo with Presence of Gond. So this was printed in Shadowmoor. It's a 2 and a green enchantment aura. Or when you, it gives the ability to tap, put 1/1 token onto the battlefield. So you can just make infinite 1/1s if you enchant Midnight Guard with this enchantment. So I'm surprised this actually got first place. I know last week we were kind of worried that Delver might be the menace here, but it seemed to be a pretty diverse metagame this time around.
That's an interesting one. I don't think I've ever seen that deck in Pauper before.
It's popped up once in a while. I haven't seen, like, this is probably the best version I've seen because there's a couple reasons why I like it a lot. I mean, I tried to put Apostle's Blessing in my list and it just seemed terrible. So Benevolent Bodyguard does the same thing pretty much, and it's a much better option because you want more creatures. And I never put Soul Sisters in my deck because I always think those cards are just terrible, but that's a way to gain infinite life as like an alternate win kind, I guess. And you have the token generators, Battle Screech, and two copies of Sen's Enlistment. Those kind of synergize with Communion of the Gods. That was another one that for some reason I just didn't think of. So one green sorcery from Theros, if you don't know this one. Reveal the top five cards of the library, put in creature or enchantment, put one of those into your hand and the rest in the graveyard. So it kind of synergizes nicely. You can grab either piece of the combo, but also puts all your flashback cards or retrace in the graveyard, so you kind of have like a nice little ability to grind as well. So I'm definitely going to try this list out. I have the whole deck pretty much besides the three Prismatic Strands.
Yeah, the deck seems sweet for sure.
Nothing really else in Pauper that I saw that really caught my eye. The only other challenge that caught my eye was the Modern challenge. Dredge, of course, was the winning deck, which was nothing special, but the sixth place list, of course, I have to talk about it. Four copies of Smallpox. I mean, any kind of Pox deck, my ears perk up a little bit. So I just want to say it's amazing how a card like Fatal Push like really has changed the format.
Yeah, this deck is really interesting. Push certainly having massive influence. Pushing cards like Lightning Bolt out of the format because it's just so efficient and that the card just isn't needed anymore as the efficient removal spell.
Right, instead of Path to Exile, because this card doesn't want to cast Path to Exile. So it's just like, and this needs a one-mana removal spell. Well, usually black-white decks needed Path to Exile to do this.
Yeah, and now it doesn't. Now Path, you know, the creatures are so efficient and modern, you have that Fatal Push. And if there's bigger creatures for this deck to kill, you turn to things like Nevermore, Smallpox, or Never Return, Smallpox.
Yeah, that was an interesting inclusion, Never Return. New card from Amonkhet's, the Aftermath card. So yeah, a lot of this card, token generators, pretty much it. Other than that, cast Smallpox, yeah. So sweet. I really want to try this one out as well. So
this is funny because at the GP, a person in our group plays Smallpox, a person in the Irish group. And I was joking, you know, we're joking, it's not a great deck in general and modern, but like, yeah, I think it's actually really good probably against Joan Deathshadow and Grixis Deathshadow. If I don't hit the Smallpox with a counter spell or discard spell, that card kind of ruins me. And I also said Bloodghast maybe could be considered as a sideboard slot for the mirror in the Joan or in the Grixis Deathshadow decks because you are really attrition-y in the mirror. And if you have the last creature standing, it's probably going to, you know, go very far, and having a creature that's possibly hasty out of your graveyard and you could Thought Scour into your graveyard is pretty huge. And this deck gets to run both those cards that I thought was good against Deathshadow. So this deck looks like it's a bit teched out to beat that matchup.
Yep. Not much else to report on this. Vintage pretty much had a similar top 8 list. Legacy had more black-red reanimator, but otherwise had a pretty decent, healthy metagame. As far as I could see. So that will do it for Magic Island News this week. There's supposed to be an announcement to PTQs coming out after the recording of this episode, so hopefully we won't dedicate too much negativity towards that announcement next week on the podcast. So no community news this week. Instead, we have a fun game to close out the show with. So we haven't done a fun game on the show in a while. So Dave and Nathaniel, they are completely in the dark of what the game is, so none of us could practice for it. And I've been itching to do it since Limited Resources started having it as a regular segment on the show. So the segment on LRCast, it's called Let's Stump Vargas, LSV. It basically tests LSV's knowledge of old Magic cards. So Marshall will open up an old booster pack, reads the name of the card, and LSV has to give all the stats on the card. And then Marshall will judge whether the answer is close enough or not. So I asked Dave and Nathaniel what their favorite sets were. I concealed the information, though, so they didn't know what this game actually was, so they couldn't practice. So now we're going to do a three-way dance of Let's Stump Vargas.
Oh, wow.
So I actually purchased all three booster packs online, so there's actual stakes on the show. So whoever has the most correct will get all the cards. That's my my stipulation, so we can...
Usually I get super embarrassed by these games.
That's okay.
I'm just gonna say I'm gonna be terrible. So, you know, I was like, I'm gonna tell him what my favorite set is, but I don't remember enough of the cards, if that matters. Here we are.
I'm sorry.
I should have just been like beta. Beta's my favorite.
Oh well. Well, we picked some boosters with potential money to open. So Nathaniel, you selected Onslaught, which of course has the fetch lands. It was actually the cheaper out of the options. So
well, you're welcome.
I appreciate that. But Dave, you picked Zendikar. You also said Innistrad, but I'm sorry, that's my pick. But
sure.
So Zendikar has the other cycle of fetch lands, and then Innistrad, of course, Liliana, Snapcaster. So there's some money cards here. So
I should have said Vintage Masters. That would be an expensive pack to buy.
And also, I promise, I did zero preparation. I did not look at any of the cards before this game. I promise you. You just have to have belief in the honor system for this one.
Okay, okay.
I'm just going to Google whatever it is.
Natanya, do you want to go first?
Sure.
Set the standard, sure. The gold.
Yeah, we'll set the bar real low. Although, you know, we might get lucky, and I'll just happen to know it.
Yep. All right, we'll do this like a normal booster pack. I'll start with the commons and then work my way up to the rare. So let me open this.
Ah, I love that sound.
Yes.
Fresh card smell.
All right.
The smell's good, too, but I'm not getting that, unfortunately, on Magic Island.
All right, here we go. So, Lens Stop Vargas. We're doing a pack of Onslaught. Nathaniel's the first one. So, here we go. Your first card is Spined Basher.
Spined. Oh, we're going to do all the cards. Holy crap.
Yep.
I thought we were just doing the rare.
Oh, no. Rare's the hardest part sometimes.
Does it have Morph?
Yes.
So, what do I need to tell you what it does?
Yep.
Spine Basher. It's got to be green.
Incorrect.
And then it's red, I guess?
Nope.
What?
Wow.
I give up already then.
It is a zombie beast, so...
I don't remember that one. I'm sorry. I bet it morphs for three, though.
Yeah. Three. It's three mana to cast. It's a 3/1. That's it.
Wow.
And oh, so it's a 2 in black, and then it morphs for 2 in a black?
2 in a black.
Okay.
Really weird card.
So I guess I know the card, but I didn't... Right, know the name.
All right. Okay. Well, that was a little bit of a hard one. We have some easier ones. This is a super softball. If you don't get this one, I may have to kick you off the show here, okay? What is shock?
Shock? I don't know. I'm just kidding. I do know shock. It's red, and it deals two damage to target creature or player.
All right, ding. You got one. Yes. And this next one's not too hard either. Right, so I know this one from Commander. So
that's the best shock art as well, the last one. It is
sweet.
It's Psychotog getting shocked, and it's ironic because he never gets shock.
Dave, can you keep track of how many he's got right?
Yeah.
Just the one so far. Just the one, Dave.
This next one I think you should get. This isn't too hard, at least in my opinion. So Secluded Step.
It's the white cycle land. So it's a land and it cycles for one white to discard a card, draw a card.
I'll give you credit. It has one more line of text.
It comes into play tapped.
Correct. All right, there. So you got two. I think it's going to get harder here. Noisy Goblin.
Nosy Goblin?
I'm sorry, Nosy Goblin.
Is it it's a 2/1 for one and a red? And
what's its ability?
It's something bad. it's a drawback, if I recall.
Sorta. It's an activated ability.
Really? Sack it to deal one damage to a creature or something?
All right, you got the sack part right, but it's a... Ooh, you can... No, Nathaniel, one more chance to correct it. Yes, it's tap and sack, but what does it do?
Tap and sack. Target creature can't block this turn?
It's nosy.
Yeah, I think nosy.
No,
why is it sticking its nose in something?
Oh, look at a player's hand or something? Look at a morph? Look at a morph card?
Destroy target face down creature.
Destroy target face down creature? Wow, okay.
And it was 2 in a red, so you not too close on that one.
Yeah, no. But
it's okay.
But it was a 2/1 for 2, though, right?
2/4, yeah. We're not bad.
But is it a 2/1 for one and a red?
2/1, it's 3 mana.
Oh, 3 mana, okay.
Okay, this next one's probably also really hard, I'm guessing. Image Crafter.
Image Crafter, target creature becomes all creature, becomes, a, you know, you choose what creature type it is.
Okay, you have the ability correct. What's, how much mana?
It's a 1/1 for one blue.
Very good. All right, there you go. I thought it was a completely unplayable card, so I was like...
Oh, that card's awesome. Love that card. Okay.
Yeah, it's real good.
Very nice.
See, I mean, it's good not doing too bad.
Okay, this one's probably harder. Fever Charm.
That's the red charm?
Correct.
Whew. It costs one red, I think.
Correct.
It's an instant.
Mm-hmm.
+2/+0 target creature.
Correct.
Two damage to the dome.
Mm-mm.
Target creature can't block this turn.
Nope. Dave, do you know this one?
No, I don't actually know the Fever
Charm. It has three abilities, right?
Yeah, this one's tough.
Yeah.
So the other two abilities are target creature gains haste, and then Fever Charm deals 3 damage to target wizard.
Sure.
Wow.
Sure.
Okay.
The classic.
Well, anti wizard tech.
All right. Next up, we have Disciple of Malice.
1/2.
Yes.
For one and a black.
Correct.
Cycles for 2 colorless.
Correct.
Has
one more line of text.
Target player loses number of... No? Something about clerics. It's a cleric, right?
It is a cleric, yep. What do you think, Dave? He's so close. He has everything else but one.
I'll give him that. I think that's fine. Okay. That's a pretty detail. Sure. He knew it was a cleric.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I mean, it's protection from white.
Ah, pro white. Got it.
Yeah, I'll give you that one, too. You got everything else perfectly, so... All right. Demystify.
Demystify, I think, is one white. It's an instant, and you can look at a morph creature, see what it is.
No, this should be a reprint, too.
Oh, is it enchant? Is it destroy an enchantment, then?
Yes.
My bad. Okay. I think for every card, I've guessed that you can look at a face-down card. Is yet to be correct.
Yep. All right, how many have we got here, Dave?
Five so far.
Five? So that's not bad. That's not bad. Daunting Defender.
Is it five mana? Converted, yes. Mana cost? It's definitely white.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a 3/5?
No.
5/3?
Nope.
3/3?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's its ability?
It must be a morph.
Nope.
No?
Alright, I'm not giving in this one.
Wait, hold on. Daunting Defender? Can it remove itself from combat if it gets blocked? No, I'm thinking a Gust Cloak.
So it's a 3/3 human cleric. If a source would deal damage to the cleric, prevent one damage.
Yeah, okay.
Or no, prevent one damage to a cleric you control. Prevent one damage.
I didn't know what that did, but like, I know it's art. It's like the clerics from that set look weird, and he's like kind of hunching over with a hand.
Yeah, he's got like a club in his hand, I think. Yeah.
Yep. Okay, this one I think was in, maybe it was in Vintage Masters. This looks familiar to me. Choking Tethers.
Choking Tethers cycles for one and a blue. It costs three colorless and a blue, and you can tap, I think, up to four target creatures.
Instant. Correct. What happens when you cycle it, though?
Then you tap one creature.
Correct. Okay.
Great card.
All right. Brightstone Ritual. This one is not very good. I've played it in Commander before, but...
It adds red mana, I
correct.
Think. But it's not good.
Nope.
So I was gonna say like a red to add two red, but it's not that good, right? It was garbage. It was unplayable. I remember that.
These are the hard cards to get, yeah.
Ones you don't even look at in draft.
Nope.
I mean,
I assume it's unplayable in draft.
I would just, I'll just guess like a sorcery, like one and a red to add two red to mana pool.
It is actually an instant, one mana, so it's one red for an instant. Add red to your mana pool for each goblin on the battlefield.
Okay. Wow. Not good.
So I assume it's not very good. I don't know.
I probably got some fringe. Fringe.
All right, this next one has awesome artwork. Nameless One. I think we're in the uncommons now.
Yeah. I'm just trying to remember which color it is. Is it white?
No.
That's Dauntless One?
I'll give you the creature type. It's a wizard avatar.
Oh, so it's the blue one then.
Yep.
So it's a three and a blue, and it's a star power toughness.
Correct.
Equals the number of wizards you control?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Is there line of text?
Flying?
Nope.
I give up then.
It has more for two and a blue.
Oh, really? Okay.
So I don't know if we can give you that one.
Nah, it doesn't.
Next uncommon, Invigorating Boon. It is a build around me enchantment.
This was a hard
pack. Does it make beasts?
No.
I don't know.
One in the green enchantment. Whenever a player cycles a card, you may put a +1/+1 counter on target creature.
Oh, wow. Okay. It's the Astral Slide Rift green card.
Yeah, I guess so.
What a cycle. What a banned cycle.
All right, next up, I don't think you'll get either. Commando Raid.
Yeah, this one, it feels like I should know it. Yeah, I'm not even going to try. If it's long, there's no chance. I think it's two in a red, though.
Wow, okay. Well, do you want to give it a shot? It is two in red.
I'm thinking, because I keep thinking of Skirt Commando. The goblin guy, where if he gets through, he does two damage to a creature they control. But
yeah, I mean, you're sort of there, but I'm not gonna give you this one. So it doesn't threaten, but it gives you one of your creatures can so target creature you control gains. When this creature deals combat damage to a player, you may have it deal damage equal to its power to target creature that player controls.
Oh, so it does exactly what Skirt Commando does.
Yeah.
Oh, it does.
Well, Skirt Commando is like a 2/1 for two red and one colorless, and you played a lot of like bluffing games with morph and stuff, and sure. So if you didn't block that one and it got through, then it killed your morph. You know, it was a good card.
All right, we have our rare here, Riptide Replicator. I actually know this one from Commander as well.
Well, it's blue.
Nope.
No? Oh. Is it the artifact?
Correct.
Okay.
One does have a lot of text on it, but once you get rolling with
it's like it's a tap it for X mana, or is it, it's got an X. If you like remove a card from your hand, and then you can remove a creature card from your hand, exile a creature card from your hand.
You're not close.
No? X and sacrifice a creature.
No.
They make tokens, right?
It does.
Does it make one? It makes 1/1 artifact tokens.
No.
No?
Dave, save us here.
Don't you pay X when it comes into play, and then you can pay X and tap it to make XX tokens? Is that that one?
Sorta. I'll just read it. 4 colorless and X. So when the big thing with this is when it enters the battlefield, you choose a color and creature type. So that's why it's somewhat playable in Commander because there's some weird creature type decks that you want. So thought of playing this in a Scarecrow deck. And it enters play with X charge counters, and you pay 4 and tap it, and you create an XX token.
I was close. I think I was close because this was like in one of my first decks with Vernal Bloom and Seaborn Muse.
Mm.
That was a thing.
Yeah, I remember it now. I should have got that one.
That's a tough one.
Yeah.
6.
So yeah, it was a playable rare, and I played it plenty of times, so I should have gotten it.
All right, 6 isn't too bad.
Yeah.
All right.
It's pretty old. Set 6 is pretty good, I think. That set is also nonsense. Like, the commons... Seriously. Why does that thing that cycles have protection from white? Because we wanted to give it an ability.
Sparksmith.
All right.
That's common.
All right, Dave. You're going to go next. I want to open the Zendikar card pack right now. Okay. So let's battle here. All right. Open one. Vines of the Vastwood. Easy one to start here.
So a green to cast. You can kick it for green. If you didn't kick it, your creature can't be the target of spells or abilities that your opponents control. And if you did kick it, it gets +4/+4.
Bang. Perfect.
Instant.
Instant. Damn.
Doesn't get it.
he got all the other techs like, to like.
That was
the
a softball. Let's move on. Okay. That's a modern staple.
Yeah. Turn Timber Grove.
Term Timber Grove is a green. It's a land that comes into play, produces green. When it comes into play, tapped, and a creature, I think it's a creature you control, gets +1/+1 until end of turn.
That is correct.
Just a little note, I guess, before I should mention, this was my favorite set, not because it's great, but because I have fond memories of drafting it like 2 to 3 times a night on draft night with friends.
Very nice. Stonework Puma.
3 mana artifact, 2/2 ally.
Nathaniel, I think we're in trouble here, man.
Yeah, this doesn't seem good.
I know Innistrad pretty good, but I mean, if you know Stonework Puma, I mean, this card seems terrible. So
it's an ally, and it's colorless, so it was an actual playable.
All right, okay. I'm still concerned here, but we'll see. Ruinous Minotaur.
1 red for 5/2. You have to sack a land, but I can't remember if it's when it attacks. Yeah, it's whenever it attacks or blocks, sacrifice a land.
Daniel, how lenient do we get here?
Or is it whenever it deals damage, sacrifice a land?
All right, since you got it, yeah.
Okay, that's it. Yeah, it was one of them. Apologies.
Not at all lenient, though. To answer your question, not at all.
I always give a chance. If something, I always said something's wrong here, and he immediately got it. So,
yeah, no, that's fair. I'm just saying, you know, it sounds like we need to be a little more aggressive.
Yeah.
Also, this one's also a playable. That looks like an unplayable, but also a playable.
This is another softball here. Pillar Field Ox. It's been reprinted before.
A 3 and a white for a 2/4.
Any other text?
Flavor text, I thought.
It's an ox, too.
It's an ox.
No. Dave's right. I was trying to trick him. Yeah, there's just flavor text.
Is it not an ox?
No, it is an ox. Okay. Actually, on Magic Online, there's no flavor text on here.
Oh, no.
No, you still get that one. All right. Oh, man, another easy one. This is not fair. Paralyzing Grasp. This is another reprint.
2 and a blue enchanted creature doesn't untap during its untap phase.
A time step, yeah. It's easy. Hideous End.
1 black, destroy target non-black creature. Its controller loses 2 life.
Very good. Very good. That one I hadn't heard before. All right, this next one I've seen before. Ghouldra's Vampire.
1 mana, 1/1 if you're on if your opponent has 10 or less life, it gets +2/+1 and intimidate.
Jeez. What's his creature type?
Vampire.
Vampire.
Oh, vampire assassin?
It's rogue. I'm giving to that one. You got everything else right.
I love how it's like he's in a spelling bee. He repeats the card name, and then he says what it is. You gotta say it again at the end, or you don't get it.
If you want me to describe the art, I'll describe the art for you.
No, that's okay. We did that. We need to get this going. Goblin Shortcutter.
One and a red for a 2/1 when it comes into play. Target creature can't block.
Yeah, I assume that was a pretty good card in this format.
Yeah, really good.
You want to attack. Two drops are great, so I assume that was good. All right, this card cannot be playable. Caravan Herda.
Is it 5 mana, 1/5 lifelink? White, 1/5 lifelinker. Big yellow guy in the art.
Yeah. Man, we're going to go perfect here. This is troublesome. All right, we're in the uncommons already. Turn Timber Basilisk.
1 green for a 2/1 landfall. Death Twitcher, landfall, give it lore. So target creature must block at this turn of fable.
Yeah, that's correct.
I knew way more of these than I thought, by the way. I did not think I knew too many of these.
Next one is sweet art. Kalini Gem.
Kalini Gem is 4 mana artifact, comes into play tapped. When it comes into play, return 2 lands from play to your hand or sacrifice Kalani Gem. It produces any combination of mana you want.
You said a lot of words there that kind of are somewhat... You need to rephrase it. Try it one more time. I'm not going to tell you what's wrong about that.
So it is a 4 mana artifact that comes into play. Oh, it doesn't come into play tapped. It just comes into play. It bounces 2 of your lands, so you must return 2 lands to your hand. And then does it just make 2 colorless mana?
I don't know. I don't know if I can give you this one, Dave.
I might be wrong. I can picture its art, and I know it's like makes mana and bounces lands, but that's about it.
What do you think, Nathaniel? I can't be partial on this.
Well, I don't know what it does. So I would say no, though. Not knowing nothing else, and knowing that he's gotten every single one so far.
Yeah, I'm gonna be too lenient on this one.
Bring him down.
4 mana artifact. When it enters the battlefield, return 2 lands to your owner's hands. You got that one right, but yeah. Add 2 mana of any one color mana.
Any one color. Okay.
Come on, Dave. You don't even know this set. Jeez.
That's fair.
Hellfire Mongrel.
2 and a red for a 2/2. At the beginning of your upkeep, if your opponent has 2 or less cards in hand, deal them 2 damage.
There's one part that's wrong.
At the beginning of your opponent's upkeep?
Yep. Okay. Our rare is unfortunately not a money rare, but it is Sphinx of Jawar Isle.
Jar Jar Sphinx. It's 4 I want to say 4 blue for 5/5. You may look at the top card of your library. And does it have hexproof? Or 5 blue? 5 blue blue?
You have one more chance to correct this. You had 2 things wrong.
5 and a blue.
Close.
5 and a blue. 5/5 flying sphinx. Can't be targeted by spells or abilities. Yeah, you can look at the top card of your deck.
Yeah, you got the mana cost wrong, so I think I might have to dock you. This one's tough.
What was the mana cost? It's 5 blue blue?
It is 6 mana, but it's 4 blue blue. So what do you think, Daniel?
Yeah, I don't think he gets it.
Okay. So what, 13 out of 15?
Just 13. 13. A mere 13.
Okay.
Yeah, that's still really tough for me to beat, so.
I'll take it. Okay, so
give it to me.
My turn. I'll open one of these. Okay.
Come on, so
this is Innistrad, in case you hadn't heard. Yes, I'd like to open this motto.
It's the set I've drafted the most, and it's my favorite set.
So is this Innistrad? So you're looking for Lily?
Or Snappy.
Well, Lily's worth much more online, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Well, we got two. We got 2 non-commons or uncommons, so. First.
Oh.
Vampiric Fury.
Oh no. Oh crap.
What if I tell you the art? What if I describe the art?
No, it's a red card. It's right?
Yeah.
It has something to do with vampires. It's like 1 red mana, right?
No. There's 1 red mana in the cost, but
I don't know this one. This one's unplayable, so.
Yeah, it's 1 in a red instant. Vampire creatures you control get +2/+0 and gain first strike until end of turn. It was pretty bad.
I did not draft vampires that much. Crap. This is bad.
Bad start. You're gonna. It doesn't look like the hardest pack, and I think you're gonna knock this one out of the park. Typhoid rats
is easy. 1 black, 1/1 with death touch.
Yep. Creature type, please.
Zombie rat.
Just rock. But we'll give you that one. Traben Purebloods.
Traben Purebloods. That's the 3/5/4/4 in a white, and that's it. It's a vanilla creature.
Yeah, it's a hound. It also looks like it's been drawn by a 2-year-old.
Yeah. I've played a few Traben Purebloods. It's always like your 24th pick, always, or your 24th card.
Yeah, for sure.
Never too happy to play in mine, but it's okay.
Okay, Naturalize.
One in green, destroy target, enchantment, or artifact. Instant.
Yes. Geist Flame.
Geist Flame is one red, deal one damage to target creature or player, has flashback of 3 and a red.
Yes.
Instant.
Dream Twist.
Dream Twist is one blue, instant, you mill... is it 5 or 3? Can't be 5, that'd be too good. So it has to be, you mill 3, target player, because you can do it to yourself, and then it has flashback of... it's either blue or one in, one in blue?
One in blue, excellent.
Yes.
Corpse Lunge.
Okay, it's black. Yeah. Is it two in the, is it two in the black?
It is.
Pretty sure it's an instant.
Uh-huh.
You exile a creature and it deals damage to a creature for its converted mana cost.
Got a little bit wrong. Got the last bit wrong.
So it must, it has to be then you, it's instant. It's definitely exile a creature and it deals damage to its power.
Yes, power. Also, yes. A little bit importantly, additional cost to Corpse Lunge, not just an effect to remove the card.
Sure.
Tiny little thing No one will remember. Bonds of Fate.
Bonds of Fate, easy, awesome card. One in a white, enchantment aura. Enchanted creature can attack or block unless it's human. If it's human, it gets +2/+2.
Yeah, it's worded slightly differently, but exactly.
Yeah, I was thinking in my head, I'm like, this is not how it's worded. That's what it does.
Okay, Armored Scob. Scob.
Armored Scob's great. So that's 2 in the blue. It's a zombie. I don't know if it's something else. It's 1/4. When it comes into play, you mill 4?
Yeah, top 4. Zombie okay. Warrior, if anyone's worrying.
Warrior. Okay.
Unburialites.
All right, so we're in the uncommons already? Wow.
Yeah, you're raising through these.
Black and 4 colorless. Sorcery. Put target creature from your graveyard onto the battlefield and has flashback of 4 and a white.
Excellent. Rally the Peasants.
This one's easy. This was in the Pauper deck that we were looking at, so it's... Ooh, I have to get my converted mana cost. So it's definitely an instant. I think it's 2 and a white, attacking creatures you... creatures you control. I don't think it's attacking creatures. Creatures you control get +2/+0. Has flashback of 1 and a red, I think.
You got last bit wrong?
It has to be 2 and a red, then.
2 and a red, yes.
Okay.
Wow. Okay, this is the only kind of... Arbitrary one, the rest of them are all. Vampiric Fury has been the only one that's been like an oddball. This one was good, but you might just not get it. Abattoir Ghoul.
No, I think I've played this one a bunch. So it's the zombie. It's 3 and a black.
Yeah.
Correct? Is it this one?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. It's the 3/2 first strike. When Abattoir Ghoul kills a creature, you gain life. Oh, twist power or something?
Not power.
It's just toughness then, I guess.
Yeah, toughness. It's whenever a creature dealt damage by it would die this turn. So he doesn't have to specifically kill it. Okay, Moorland Haunt. As the rare, pretty easy rare.
Moorland Haunt's uncommon, actually.
No, Moorland Haunt is a rare.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm thinking of something else. Sorry. I was thinking of the token card. Never mind. Moorland Haunt's the colorless land. It taps for a colorless blue white exile target creature, and you get a 1/1 flying spear token.
Where are we exiling the creature from?
My graveyard. Only your graveyard.
Yeah. Okay. Last one. We got the old double rare. We got our Cruin Outlaw. If you get this, you beat me.
Yeah, this is so hard.
There's so many random ones.
This one's really hard, though, because this one I didn't play very much. I didn't like red in the set. It's a red card, I know.
Yeah, red card.
It's one red. 3/2, is it 3/2?
Nope.
Yeah, there's no way I'm going to get this one. I think it might have double strike or something.
It's flip side indeed. Does have double strike.
Double strike. Yeah, I guess the front side has first strike, and then the other side. I'm not going to get this specific, so you can't get me this one.
Okay, it's first strike, and then it just flips 2 mana, 3 mana, you got the mana cost right, it's red. First striking, human, rogue, werewolf, 2/2, flips into a double strike, but your werewolves also have menace.
Right, okay, yeah, this was in the werewolf deck, yeah. It's very few times I played it, just because I didn't play the werewolf deck, that didn't come together that often.
It's pretty bonkers, if this guy ever flips, you're like, there's no way you're losing.
Yeah, those other ones I know better, the rare... Has a picture of the guys like fighting old timey style. What's that one called?
Oh, the green one. All your guys get trampled. Oh no, it's red.
No, there's another red one.
Yeah, it's 4 mana, and it's like a 5/4 when it flips, and all your werewolves get like +2/+0 on trample or something.
Yeah, I think it's like creatures you control too. It's not just werewolves. Oh, wow. It's decent.
So we got a tie. Right. We got a tie.
Man, how do we solve this?
Did I win?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you won. Because we're tied, you win, because you didn't tie.
Man, I thought I didn't do too bad, but in my defense, Onslaught is a much older set.
It is a much older set. You probably didn't draft it half as much as I drafted.
I don't think I've ever drafted anything as much as you've drafted any set, Dave. I think Connor underestimated the degeneracy of your play.
So. Yeah, for sure.
Man, I was so concerned with the first one. I was like, oh, no. No.
Yeah.
Because I even know most of the bad cards, too, because like, they're somewhat playable. But that one, it's like...
I saw it play like once to any effect. At all. And yep. Their deck was busted because they literally had every vampire in the set. You had a bunch of, what's the Interloper? 2 mana, 2/1 flyer.
Yeah, I played that card a ton. Vampire Interloper. I know that one. And I could even tell you the stake one. Is it? No, that's Wooden Stake. It has something to do with vampires as well. Like I know that card because that's like a good sideboard card. But yeah, Vampiric Fury. Man, that got me. Rare, I'm not too upset about because some of the flip cards are hard to keep control.
That was a good game. Good game.
Yeah, we might have to just run it back next week because we don't have time to do another round to break this tiebreak, the tiebreak. So, yeah, I definitely want to do it again. That was a lot of fun. I don't think I could, like, get better with the new sets either. If I had to do Amonkhet, there's no way I could get, like...
I probably could get, I'm going to say 14 out of 15. Sorry.
Oh, you think you do that good?
Whatever, 13. Because technically we counted the land, we didn't get 15 each or whatever. We actually got a 12 technically.
Well, you could probably get the land. I
could probably. Planes. Oh, produces one red. Oh man, every time.
Oh, sorry. You have to tap it to do that.
I would give myself 100% on Amonkhet. I think.
Wow.
Right. Well, we'll talk next time. Maybe we go with our second.
Yeah, second.
Maybe we go with second favorite set of all time or something
Invocation,
like that.
Invocation Containment Priest. And then you won't be able to get it. Whatever invocation you don't know.
What invocation? But you don't give me the name of it. You just show me the text, as in the white text. What's bird upside down zebra? I don't get it.
That's the next level challenge of this game. I like.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was a fun game, but unfortunately, that's going to do it for this episode. So let's go over upcoming events on Magic Online this week. We have the Throwback Standard Gauntlet, the early 2000 standard, so that is coming up this week. For premier events, there's a Standard Mox Monthly on Friday the 2nd, a Standard PTQ on Saturday, and a Sealed PTQ on Sunday. You can always email the show at carterpodcast@gmail.com. I will be putting the Magic Online wishlist in the show notes. I was hoping to squeeze a Magic Online wishlist into this episode, but we ran a little bit longer than usual, I would say. But we'll definitely bring it back next week on the show. Personally, you can hit me up on Twitter at Connor P. O'Donnell or check out my stream on Twitch at Connor OD. So where can they get a hold of both of you guys?
They can find me on Twitch 4 to 5 days a week. Dave C. there, that's SEA. This week, I will not be able to do Friday as my impromptu Amsterdam trip will take me away for another Friday. Probably the same the week and after for Copenhagen. But if you want to see how I'm doing in those events, join me on Twitter where I'll try live tweeting as long as there's Wi-Fi in the vicinity how I am doing, just as I did for GP Copenhagen. I'm Dave C. It's SEA89 on that.
Yeah, you actually came through on that, which I was impressed with.
Yeah, there was Wi-Fi. I told you, if there's Wi-Fi.
I know. You.
Yeah, Dave, the suspense, like when I woke up, I'm like, oh, I gotta check my phone.
For me, at Card Hoarder on Twitter, typically me replying. And if you'd like to have a lengthier discussion, Nathaniel at cardhoarder.com.
Remember, of course, you can find the show every week on cardhoarder.com. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and we will see you next week.